This is an introduction to Chinese herbology video covering the category tonifying herbs, which has four subcategories: herbs that tonify the qi, herbs that tonify the blood, herbs that tonify the yang, and herbs that tonify the yin. Now, normally in the introduction class, we just do an overview of each category and then cover one herb from that category. So here we'll be talking about renshen, shudihuang, lurong, and maimendong. So what I did here was really just splice together some clips from the Herbology 3 lectures and put together the relevant parts into one video. So that way, if you're in the introduction class, you can just watch this one video all the way through rather than having to click around to the different videos in Herbology 3. So, hope you enjoy. So this is herbs that tonify the qi, and when we talk about tonifying the qi, we're mainly talking about two different systems, the lung and the spleen. Because remember, these are our sources of postnatal qi. The lung is where we get the da qi, the qi of the air, and the spleen is where you get the gu shui qi, the qi of grain and water, or the qi from the food that we eat. So when we look at the herbs in this category, we're normally talking about these two organ systems. So if we're dealing with lung qi deficiency, what does that look like? Well, we could have shortness of breath. Remember, the lung governs respiration, so if we don't have enough qi in the lung can't take in the air, or the lung has problems getting in air, so we'll have shortness of breath. Or you can get easily out of breath with little exertion because you don't have enough qi for the lung to control respiration. You can have a low, faint voice or a soft voice. So this is something that you can look for when you see a patient is, do they have a loud shouting voice? Does their voice project? That's probably more of an excess condition. Whereas if they have a low, soft voice, it's like they don't have enough qi for their voice to get out. They don't have enough qi to project the sound of their voice. So lung qi deficiency can present with a low, faint voice. We can have a forceless cough. And again, this is going to, you can think about this as excess versus deficiency. If we have an excess heat pathogen or if we have excess phlegm in the lung, the person will usually have a loud barking cough or a loud hacking cough with a lot of force behind it, indicating excess. But if we're dealing with lung qi deficiency, this is going to be like a very quiet, forceless cough, like a kind of a chronic, always there type of thing. Again, this is like the lung doesn't have enough qi to downbear the qi of the air, so it rebels back upwards in this chronic weak cough. And then we can also have spontaneous sweating. So one way you can think about this is, remember, one of the functions of qi is containment or holding things in. So if the lung qi is deficient, the lung qi can no longer contain the fluids and the fluids leak out. Or you can think about this in terms of the lung governs the exterior, the lung governs the interstices, the zhouli spaces, or we could say the lung governs the opening and closing of the pores. And so if there's lung qi deficiency, the interstices become unsound, the lung qi can't hold those pores closed, and so the sweat leaks out, so we have spontaneous sweating or sweating with little exertion. Kind of related to this, we can talk about the lung governing the exterior and the Wei qi. So if the lung qi is deficient, the Wei qi might be deficient, and not only is the sweat leaking out, but it's very easy for pathogens to get in. So kind of along with spontaneous sweating, we can say that the patient gets sick very easily. Sometimes this happens, like especially when with patients will come in with their children and they'll say, oh, my child gets sick every month. Every time somebody at school is sick, they catch it. So they have a weak immune system, or they get sick very easily. That could indicate the Wei qi is not strong enough to keep the pathogens out, and we can kind of attribute that to deficient lung qi. The other one we can talk about is the spleen. Again, the spleen is where we get our nutrients. The spleen digests the food. It's our source of qi from grain and water. So if spleen qi is deficient, we could see things like lethargy or weak extremities. Basically, you're not digesting your food. You don't have enough energy, so you feel tired. You feel lethargic. We say weak extremities. Remember, we said that the spleen governs the four limbs. So if spleen qi is deficient, we can't lift the four limbs. The spleen governs the flesh or the muscles, so we don't have that muscular strength to lift the four limbs. So sometimes I've heard people say this where it's like, like massage therapists. It's like after I do one or two massages, like I can't lift my arms. I can no longer hold my arms up. We could say that's weakness in the extremities or weakness of the four limbs. And something interesting here that Wiseman will point out is that when we say lethargy, we don't just mean the person is physically tired or physically fatigued. We can also say lassitude of spirit, as in they're just not energetic or they don't have a lot of motivation. So that could be spleen qi deficiency. We can also see poor appetite or indigestion. The spleen is responsible for digestion. The spleen stomach rots and ripens the food and moves it through the digestive system. So if you don't have enough spleen qi, your spleen can't break down the food. So it's like because the food's not being broken down, you don't really have cravings for more. So you have poor appetite or low appetite. And then if there's not enough energy to break that down and move it through the system, we can have indigestion, like upset stomach, nausea, vomiting, stuff's not moving through because there's not enough qi to keep things moving. We could have loose stools or diarrhea. Again, if we could think of this as the spleen is not digesting the food properly, the spleen is not transforming the food, so it comes out kind of untransformed. Or we could think about this in terms of dampness, that the spleen has an action of transforming dampness. So if spleen qi is deficient, it fails in its function of transforming dampness, so that comes out in the stools with loose stool or diarrhea. And then we can also have sinking conditions like prolapse. And so this is another one when we talk about the middle jiao, we say the spleen has an upward direction. It's supposed to raise the clear yang or raise the clear qi, whereas the stomach has a downward direction. It's supposed to downbear the food into the small intestine and keep things moving through. So if spleen qi is deficient, it can fail to raise the clear yang. And so with that, we can get certain sinking conditions like organ prolapse, uterine prolapse, rectal prolapse, or sometimes it's just the clear qi isn't rising, so we end up with turbidity in the upper body. So we might have some dizziness or headache just because the clear yang isn't rising up to the head because of the spleen qi deficiency. This can also include things like menstruation issues, like profuse menses could be a sinking condition, or even a frequent miscarriage could be considered a sinking condition as well. And then we can say superficial edema. Again, the spleen has a function of transforming dampness. So if spleen qi is deficient and it fails to transform dampness, that dampness can accumulate and we can get superficial edema. Or I really like this. This is the term Wiseman and Brand used. Generalized vacuity puffiness, which I think is just kind of funny because normally Wiseman terminology is very very hard to say, very technical, but they use this term puffiness. Instead of water retention edema, we can just say the person is puffy. And so sometimes people ask, what do we mean by superficial edema or edema right under the skin? And so that's kind of, I think that's a good way to sum it up, is we're talking about puffiness. Sometimes edema is so superficial that if you're doing acupuncture, when you stick a needle in, some of that fluid will leak out through the hole that you punctured. And so that's what we mean by superficial edema, or you can just say generalized puffiness due to spleen deficiency. The spleen isn't transforming the fluids or transforming dampness, so that accumulates right under the skin, giving us puffiness. So these are the main signs and symptoms we're going to be looking for in this category. When we talk about herbs that tonify the qi, we're mainly talking about tonifying lung qi and tonifying spleen qi. So these are the symptoms we're going to look for lung qi deficiency and spleen qi deficiency. It turns out we can also have other types of qi deficiency. These just aren't majorly addressed in this category. So we can have heart qi deficiency. So here we might see things like palpitations or chest oppression or kind of like fullness in the chest, just because the qi is not there to help the heart beat smoothly, is maybe a way you can think about it. And then we might see an irregular pulse. I think with all of these, we're going to see kind of like a weak pulse or a deficient pulse. But with heart symptoms, we can also see an irregular pulse. And here, when we say an irregular pulse, we mean a pulse that skips beats. And with heart qi deficiency, we're looking for a slow irregular pulse or a regularly irregular pulse. So when you talk about irregular pulses, there are three different types, but one of the things we're looking at is Does it skip a beat at regular intervals, like every fifth beat it drops a beat? Or does it skip beats at irregular intervals, like it'll go 3 and then stop, and then 7 and then stop, and then 5 and then stop? So for heart qi deficiency, when we say an irregular pulse, we're specifically talking about a regularly irregular pulse, or a pulse that skips beats at regular intervals. And one of the ways we explain this is you can think about kind of like a tired old man who's going for a walk that he's very weak, so he takes 5 steps and then has to stop and rest. And then he starts going again and he takes 5 steps and he has to stop and rest. And so that's what's happening with the pulse, is because the qi is deficient, it's not able to move the blood through the vessel, so it has to stop at regular intervals to take a rest before going further. And so this is just to differentiate from other things like excess heat or fire can cause an irregular pulse, but that's more irregularly irregular. So anyway, heart qi deficiency is something that we can talk about as well, but really in this category, there are only like 2, maybe 3 herbs that we talk about for heart qi deficiency. And normally when it comes to heart patterns, we're more likely to diagnose like heart blood deficiency or heart yin deficiency or something like that. But so this isn't something that we commonly see in this category, but it will come up in 1 or 2 herbs. So we could pay attention to that because that makes it stand out. And then something we can also talk about is kidney qi deficiency. And this is another one that's kind of weird, because normally when we talk about the kidneys, we say the kidneys are the root of all yin and yang in the body. So normally when we talk about the kidneys, we are talking about kidney yin deficiency, kidney yang deficiency, or kidney essence. So what do we mean by kidney qi? Well, on the one hand, we can think about kidney qi. Qi has this action of transformation. So we can say it's the kidney qi that is transforming the fluids. Or we can say that the kidney has something to do with urination, and that there's this gate that has to open and close to let the urine out or keep the urine in. And so that's what kidney qi is doing. That's what powers that opening and closing, or letting out and holding in the urine. So we can think of kidney qi as that way. But one of the simple ways one of my teachers explained it is when we say kidney qi deficiency, that specifically means kidney yang deficiency plus leakage. So here we're going to see certain leakage problems like frequent urination, nighttime urination, or incontinence. We could see seminal emission, nocturnal emission, spermatorrhea, premature ejaculation, or we could see things like vaginal discharge. So leakage of fluids and leakage of essence. So those are the types of things we're talking about when we say kidney qi deficiency. But it turns out we have a separate category that for these types of conditions. Since kidney qi deficiency, it's kind of implied that there's some kidney yang deficiency as well. So we're going to talk about these things under the category herbs that tonify yang. So yes, we can technically say there's such a thing as kidney qi deficiency, but it's just we're not really going to see it come up in this category. Here we can also talk about the kidney having to grasp the lung qi. We could also talk about that as kidney qi. But basically, when we get into this category, most of the herbs are going to be talking about lung qi deficiency and or spleen qi deficiency with these types of signs and symptoms. And we might occasionally see 1 or 2 herbs for heart qi deficiency as well. So that's what we're dealing with in this category, herbs that tonify qi. This slide, I think we just, this summarizes everything we talked about: spleen qi deficiency, lung qi deficiency. The failure to transform fluids can result in edema, or we can have some sinking conditions due to organ prolapse. And so we look at the properties of either. The taste is going to be sweet, because remember the sweet flavor tonifies. The temperature is usually going to be warm, because qi has a warming function, so most of these herbs are just warm in temperature. The main channels are going to be the lung and the spleen, because like we said, those are sources of postnatal qi. We might occasionally see some things that enter the heart channel or the kidney channel, but by and large, most of these enter both the lung and the spleen, or at least one or the other. Some cautions and contraindications: that these herbs are sweet, rich, and cloying. And this is something that we generally say about the tonifying category in general, that these herbs, because they tonify, they tend to be sweet. They can easily cause digestive problems because they're sweet, sticky, cloying nature. Or when we tonify, it can easily cause stagnation. Like if we just pile more qi into there, we need to make sure that the qi is moving so it doesn't become stagnant. So we're going to want to combine these herbs with herbs that regulate the qi or herbs that move the qi. And we're also going to have to be careful to look out for any signs of digestive problems. And then we also say excessive or chronic use may cause fullness in the chest or heat signs. And so again, this is because they're sweet. They kind of have some cloying nature, so it can easily cause some stagnation. But it's also these herbs are usually warm, so long-term or high dosages can easily cause heat signs. And this is something that you see sometimes. I think it especially happens in younger people when you have someone like in their 20s and they start doing Qigong and Tai Chi and they start getting into Qi cultivation. They're like, oh, I want to take all these Qi tonics. And it turns out like they're not actually very Qi deficient. They don't need to tonify their Qi. If anything, they just need to make sure that the Qi that they have is circulating properly. But so they'll go and try to take these Qi tonics and it ends up just either causing stagnation or causing heat signs. Like I had one guy in school that he wanted to be very Taoist and cultivate his Qi. So he was taking Korean red ginseng every day and he thought it would give him energy, make him alert, make it so he could focus on his studies. But he ended up just giving himself heat signs because all of that Korean red ginseng was just accumulating heat in the body. So that's what we want to be cautious about, is cautious in our dosage that we're not giving too much or not taking it too much that it might cause some heat signs. The main action of these herbs is, of course, to tonify qi, and we're mainly talking about tonifying the qi of the spleen and the lung. And any other thing we should keep in mind is, like we said, we usually want to combine these herbs with herbs that move the qi or regulate qi to prevent stagnation. Both that this can cause upset stomach. We could have trouble digesting them, so we add in herbs that help with digestion. But also, as we tonify that qi, we want to make sure that it's circulating properly, so we add in herbs that regulate qi. And I think these are things that we mentioned when we talk about these categories. So Chen Pi is aged tangerine peel. That's a very common one to add in. Mu Xiang is also in the category regulate qi. And Sha Ren is cardamom seed. That's in the aromatic transform dampness category, but it also has an action of regulating qi. So those are the common herbs that we're going to see used that we combine with tonifying herbs to prevent stagnation and make sure things are moving properly. So here's our list of herbs. So let's get started. Oh, and then we also have a note here that about the 18 incompatible herbs. If you remember at the very beginning when we talked about combinations of herbs, one of the things we talked about was the 18 incompatible herbs. When you say 18 incompatible herbs, we're talking about three different groups of herbs that are incompatibilities, and the total adds up to 18. So we should just know here that one of the herbs we're talking about here is gansao, which is licorice root. And we should know that gansao is one of our 18 incompatible herbs. So gansao is incompatible with daji, gansui, haizao, and yuanhua. Most of these herbs are from the harsh expellent category. So that's something that I feel like every test I've taken, I've gotten some kind of question about the 18 incompatible herbs. So I like to bring it up now in case I forget about it later. So our first herb is ren shen, ginseng radix. Ren shen, ginseng radix, and this is ginseng root. So ren shen tonifies qi, and we say that ren shen tonifies qi. Ren shen tonifies all the qi. Ren shen is our most powerful qi tonic. This is a very sought after herb. This is a very valuable herb. High quality ren shen could be very expensive, and so So what we can say is ren shen tonifies all the qi. So ren shen tonifies spleen qi for all of those things we talked about, like lethargy, poor appetite, or chronic diarrhea. Ren shen tonifies lung qi for all those things we talked about, like wheezing, shortness of breath, labored breathing on exertion, like you get tired easily and you get out of breath after just walking up the stairs. Ren shen tonifies heart qi. So this is one of the herbs that does tonify heart qi, to treat those things like palpitations, anxiety, insomnia, and forgetfulness. So because heart qi is deficient, it's having a difficulty housing the shen or calming the shen. So ren shen is one of the herbs that tonifies heart qi. And then we also say that ren shen, it's so good at tonifying qi. It's so strong at tonifying qi. It can tonify the original qi, or tonify the source qi, or Bensky says tonifies the primal qi, to treat qi collapse. So this is something that We kind of talked before in the last category, we talked about this idea of yang collapse. We had certain herbs that can rescue devastated yang, like futsa and ganjang. Well, we have a similar thing called qi collapse or qi abandonment. It's a very similar thing. We said this is similar to going into shock. It usually happens after a severe illness or if you had severe sweating or severe diarrhea, long-standing diarrhea, or profuse bleeding, like due to injury and trauma and all the blood was leaking out. So it's usually situations like this. In Western medicine, we might say the person is going into shock. In TCM, we can say, sometimes we can say the yang collapsed or the qi collapsed. And so they're very similar. I don't want to get too much into the differences between them because a lot of times they happen together, that if your yang abandons you, your qi will abandon you soon after. So it's very similar that the person has cold limbs, they're sweating profusely because there's not enough qi to hold in the fluid, so their sweat is pouring out. They can be curled up into the fetal position or curled up into the shrimp position, or they can have a pulse that's faint or minute. And so again, qi collapse and yang collapse are similar. They tend to happen together. I think with yang collapse, you're just going to have more cold signs. Technically, there is such a thing as yin collapse. We don't talk about that much. But the point here is Ren Shen is so good at tonifying qi. It's so strong. It so powerfully tonifies qi. We can say that it even tonifies the primal qi or the original qi to rescue collapse or to rescue qi from abandonment. So Ren Shen very powerfully tonifies the qi, and it tonifies all the qi. Besides that, I think one thing that people forget is Ren Shen ginseng is very famous for tonifying qi, but people forget that it also has an action of generating fluids and alleviating thirst. So besides tonifying qi, it also has a moistening action as well. So this can be for wasting and thirsting disorder. In Chinese, this is called xiaoke, wasting and thirsting. Sometimes we say it's similar to diabetes, but the idea here is that you're very thirsty, but when you drink in things, you're urinating frequently. So you have profuse urination with a lot of thirst, and your body is wasting away. And we could say this is similar to diabetes, so wasting and so by generating fluids, it's helping with the thirsting aspect of wasting and thirsting disorder. Or we can say for febrile diseases where both the qi and fluids have been damaged. So if you have an external attack, especially an external attack of wind heat, over a period of time, that external evil can wear down your qi and your upright qi loses the ability to fight back. Or maybe you took some herbs and you were able to expel the pathogen, but now you feel worn down after that battle with the evil qi. And also if there's some heat there, that can dry out the fluids. Maybe you had a wind heat attack with profuse sweating, and so now your fluids are damaged. Ren Shen can help you recover from that because it's powerfully tonifying that qi, but also generating body fluids as well. So Ren Shen tonifies both qi and fluids. The dosage is normal, but sometimes we have this special cooking instruction that we say, cook separately in a double boiler. And I think this is one of the only herbs that we say this about. But kind of the idea here is Ren Shen is very powerful, so if we want the maximum extraction, we're not just going to throw it in a pot and boil it for half an hour like we do with other herbs. We're actually going to put it in a double boiler, and so that will protect it from the extreme heat. That we, if we have this vigorous fire, it won't get too hot. We put it in a double boiler to protect it. And you might be boiling it for like 2 or 3 hours just to get that maximum extraction. And doing this nice slow heat, you'll really extract it. As far as I know, in modern times, I don't know if a lot of people do this anymore. I think even if you're prescribing this to patients, I feel like telling patients to cook your herbs for half an hour is already a bit of an ask. If you want to have them go out and buy a double boiler and then cook it for 2 hours, most modern patients are not going to be compliant with that. But I think this is more especially that if you had some very expensive ginseng, that the older the ginseng is, the larger the root, it's considered stronger and it's more expensive. So 6-year-old ginseng is much more expensive than 2-year-old ginseng, and wild ginseng is much more expensive than cultivated ginseng. So I think if you have this really expensive ginseng and you want to get the most out of it, then yeah, use it in a double boiler. If you're just making a normal formula and you're not necessarily using the high quality ginseng, I'm not sure that people necessarily do that. But that is considered a cooking instruction, and that does sometimes come up on tests. They'll say, what's the cooking instruction for renjen? You should cook it separately in a double boiler and then add that afterwards into the formula. The name renjen means man root because here for this picture, this is slices of ginseng root. But when you get the whole thing, it looks kind of like a mandrake or a mandragora. If you've watched Harry Potter, that they pull up the roots and it looks like a person. And so this is one that it kind of has a head and little stringy tails on it. So they say this looks like a person. So they call this person root. When it comes to ginseng, we have two types. We have Bairenshen, the white ginseng, and then Hongshen, the red ginseng. Hong means red, like Honghua is red flower, safflower. So Hong means red. And this difference, this isn't a different variety. This is actually just the processing. That the white renshen, you just pull it out of the ground and let it dry. The Hongshen, what they do is they steam it. And that steaming process somehow turns it red. I'm not sure if it like caramelizes certain things in it, but it's just that steaming process turns it red. So they steam it and then dry it. And so the Hongshen is a little bit warmer in temperature. So if you especially have, you're trying to tonify qi and tonify yang, or if you're trying to tonify qi and you have a lot of signs of coldness, you can use the red ginseng. If you don't necessarily want those warming properties, then you can use the white ginseng, Bairenshen. Traditionally, I think Korea is famous for having the best renshen, so we'll say Korean red ginseng. But again, this is something that we have to be careful about taking it long term, that Korean red ginseng is very warming, and so that can cause heat to accumulate and cause these heat signs. So like I said, I had that that student at school that he was taking Korean red ginseng, but he ended up with bloodshot eyes and high blood pressure because even though he was tonifying his qi, you ended up with a lot of heat accumulation as well. So that's something we want to be careful with using Hongshen in large dosages or for long-term use. So that's renshen. So herbs that tonify blood. Obviously, these herbs are used for cases of blood deficiency. So what does blood deficiency look like? Well, to understand it, we can think about the systems that are involved with blood and the tissues that are nourished by blood. So of course, the main organ dealing with blood is the liver. We say the liver stores blood. So we can think about what are the tissues related to the liver. Well, first of all, we can think about blood going to the head, that the liver has to supply that blood up to the head and to the face. So if there's insufficient blood going up to nourish the head, we can see things like dizziness and tinnitus. Basically, like the sense organs of the head are not getting enough blood. So we see these kinds of symptoms in the upper body. Remember that the liver governs the eyes. Each of the organs goes to a sense organ. So the kidney goes to the ears, the lung goes to the nose, the liver goes to the eyes. So the liver is responsible for providing nourishment to the eyes through the form of blood. And so if there's not enough blood nourishing the eyes, we can see things like dry eyes, diminished vision, I think is what Bensky says, but we can also say floaters in the vision, or I think the Chinese term is flowery vision, so little spots in the vision. This can also refer to like diminished night vision. So if a person has poor night vision, it could be that there's not enough blood nourishing the eyes. Remember, the liver also governs the sinews or the tendons. Each of the zongfu governs a tissue in the body, and the liver governs the sinews or the tendons. And so the liver is responsible for supplying blood to the sinews and tendons. So if this is not happening, the sinews can kind of dry out. Sometimes we use this image of, think about a rubber band. If you have a new fresh rubber band, it's nice and stretchy, but if you leave that rubber band out in the sun, it starts to dry out and it's no longer elastic. It's no longer flexible. It actually becomes very brittle and it's very easy to break. And so the same thing can happen if the sinews are not being nourished by liver blood. So we can see things like numbness, tingling, hypertonicity is a Nigel Weissman term. And so that means like spasm and contraction of the muscles or even tremor in the muscles because the sinews are not being nourished by liver blood. We talk about the nails. We say that the nails are the surplus of the sinews, or the liver blooms in the nails. So this is another thing that different organs. Like we say, the kidney blooms in the hair. We say the liver blooms in the nails, or the nails are the surplus of the sinews. So if those sinews aren't getting adequate blood supply, we could get things like pale, dry, brittle nails. And then liver blood also creates blood so menstruation can happen. So if we have deficiency of liver blood, then we can see certain menstruation issues like delayed menses, as in the period is late, scanty menses, not a lot of blood. Usually it's kind of thin and pale, or even amenorrhea. There's just not enough blood to form the period, so the period does not happen. This is important for fertility issues as well, that we need to regulate the menses. And sometimes we refer to this as the liver has to supply blood to the ren and the chong, the penetrating and conception vessels. And so sometimes you'll see it this way, as that the liver is not supplying blood to the ren and the chong, and so you end up with irregular menses or fertility issues. So those are our main signs and symptoms that we're going to see that are related to the liver. And this is the main one, because the liver stores blood, so it's the main blood organ. And then our other organ that can be associated with blood is the heart. The heart is responsible for moving blood, but we can also have such a thing as heart blood deficiency. And here the big thing we're going to see are Shen problems, that the heart houses the spirit. The Shen is supposed to come home to the heart. The Shen has its abode in the heart. So if the heart is not being properly nourished by blood, it cannot provide that abode for the Shen, and we get Shen disturbance or Shen uneasiness. So this could be things like palpitations, either your heart is racing, or sometimes in TCM we say more like you can feel your heart pounding in your chest. Like if you get nervous when you're about to give a big speech, you can feel your heart pounding in your chest. If you feel that at unusual times, we could call that palpitations. Anxiety, insomnia, if the Shen is not coming home to the heart and being housed by the heart at night, you end up with insomnia. And then memory problems like forgetfulness. So those are the main things we're talking about in terms of blood deficiency. These are two main organs. And so when we're thinking about what are the signs and symptoms of blood deficiency, this is a way you can remember it. You can think about what are the tissues that are associated with blood, or what are the tissues that are supposed to be nourished by blood. And so if you have blood deficiency, you're going to have that lack of nourishment, and you're going to end up with these types of signs and symptoms. Also, in general, not really associated with a particular organ, but we can have a pale, lusterless complexion just because there's not enough blood nourishing the skin. So instead of having a vibrant complexion, you have a pale or a withered yellow, lusterless complexion, like a vampire. The tongue is going to be pale because there's not enough blood nourishing the tongue, and the pulse is going to be thin. Just when you say thin, we mean thin in diameter, thin or fine or thready. Those are all different translations of the word shimai. And it's just an indication that there's not enough blood to fill the vessel, so the vessel feels thin in diameter. Another thing we can say here is also the pulse might be choppy as well. So choppy refers to the smoothness, or rather the lack of smoothness in the pulse. So if you have a smooth flowing pulse, we would say that's slippery. If it's not smooth, it can be called rough or choppy. And basically, again, if there's not enough blood to flow smoothly, the pulse is going to feel rough or choppy. So those are the signs and symptoms we'll see with blood deficiency. So we have this slide. I think we pretty much covered all of this, that we have these signs and symptoms that here. But if you want to remember these, you can relate these either to the tissues that are associated with the liver, or the heart with Shen disturbance, and blood going to the head. We also say that blood deficiency can also lead to internal wind, or internal stirring of wind, that sometimes the way we explain this is, if you think about the blood vessel as a pipe, and if the pipe is not full, the pipe is only a third of the way full, there's a lot of empty space in there, and that allows room for the wind to blow. So some of these symptoms like skin sensation problems, tingling, numbness, spasm and contraction of the sinews, loss of sensation, those can be also, we can call those wind conditions as well. And so blood deficiency can lead to this internal wind. And then something we want to pay attention to here is herbs in this category tend to be sticky and cloying, and they may cause middle jaw problems. This is something we kind of say about all of the tonifying herbs. We mentioned this in the tonify qi category, but this is especially true for herbs that tonify blood, that because blood is more substantial than qi, these herbs are just very sticky, sweet, cloying. They can very easily cause digestive problems. So we're going to want to combine these herbs with herbs that regulate qi or herbs that improve digestion, just so we can actually digest the herb. So if you're prescribing these herbs, you want to pay attention that does the patient have any indigestion, upset stomach, or are these herbs causing loose stools? And that might be a sign that you need to modify the formula to make it easier to digest. So we look at the properties here. Herbs that tonify blood are, of course, sweet in flavor because the sweet flavor tonifies. So this is going to be true of all of our categories of tonifying herbs. Temperature tends to be warm just because blood has a warming function. So tonifying blood herbs tend to be warm. Channels entered are what we mentioned, that the liver stores blood. So pretty much all of these herbs enter the liver channel. The heart moves the blood. So a lot of these herbs enter the heart channel as well, or we can have these symptoms of heart blood deficiency. The other one we sometimes talk about is the spleen. On the one hand, we can say that the creation of blood depends on the function of the spleen providing nourishment, that we need to be able to digest our food to have the nutrients to create the blood. But then we also say that the spleen controls blood, as in it keeps the blood inside the vessels. So that's something we'll occasionally see in this category, that some of these herbs enter the spleen channel as well. So cautions and contraindications, these herbs are sweet, sticky, and cloying, so overuse can cause digestive problems. So like I said, this is especially true in the tonify blood category, that we're going to want to combine these herbs with other qi regulating herbs, like the ones we've talked about so far, chen pi, mu xiang, sha ren, herbs like that, that can help digest the herbs and help prevent stagnation in the middle jaw from the sweet, sticky property of these herbs. If you're going to be up there, you better not press any buttons. You can't press buttons while you're up here. And the main action here is to tonify blood and also nourish yin. That blood is a yin substance, so a lot of times these herbs not only tonify blood, they tonify yin as well. And then like we said, we're going to want to combine these with herbs that move or regulate qi to prevent stagnation. And again, these are the herbs we talked about, like mu xiang, chen pi, and sha ren. So those are the properties of these herbs. So when we look at this category, relatively short category, but a lot of these herbs are very important and there's a lot to say about them. So let's get started with Shu Di Huang, Romania Radix Preparata. Shu Di Huang, Romania Radix Preparata. And this is prepared Romania root. I actually don't know what Romania root is, but there are some people who are really into plants. When I say this is Romania root, they know what that means. But to me, this is Shu Di Huang, Romania Radix Preparata. And Shu Di Huang, of course, tonifies blood. This is one of our main herbs for tonifying blood, and it tonifies all the blood, all the things that we talked about. So we can say for a pale complexion or a pale face, dizziness, if there's not enough blood going up to the head to nourish the head and the sense organs, palpitations, so we're not only nourishing liver blood, we're nourishing heart blood as well, and especially irregular menses. If there's not enough blood to form the period, then we can end up with irregular menses. So Shu Di Huang is one of our most important herbs for tonifying blood. But besides that, Shu Di Huang also has a very important action of tonifying yin as well. So Shu Di Huang tonifies liver and kidney yin as well. For things like weak low back and legs, remember the kidney is in the low back, the kidney governs the knees, so with kidney yin deficiency, we can end up with weak low back and legs. Tidal fever, that's fever that rises and falls like the tide, so this might be like hot flashes. If there's not enough yin anchoring the yang downward, it can rise up with tidal fever. Steaming bone disorder, we talked about this in the category herbs that clear heat from deficiency, that if you have enough yin deficiency heat, it can actually feel like your bones are steaming, so a sensation of heat emanating from the bones. night sweats. Nighttime is the yin time of day, so if your yin is deficient, it can't control the fluids and the sweat leaks out. Nocturnal emissions is something that we can see in men, and I think about this as the same way as night sweats, is that if the kidney yin is deficient, it can't hold the fluids in, but it also can't secure kidney essence, and so kidney essence leaks out in the terms of nocturnal emissions or seminal emissions. And this is also a very good herb for wasting and thirsting disease. Remember, this is something that we call xiao ke, wasting and thirsting disease, or dissipation thirst. And this is something that we say this is similar to a Western diagnosis of diabetes, that you're very thirsty, you drink a lot of fluids, but you also are urinating frequently, so none of the fluids stay in. There's usually, you have hunger as well. So xiao ke is this wasting and thirsting condition, and it can be associated with any of the three jiao. So you can have xiao ke in the upper burner, that's a lung condition, and the main symptom is thirst. You can have xiao ke related to the middle burner, and your main symptom is hunger. Or you can have xiao ke related to the lower burner, and your main symptom is polyuria, or frequent urination. And so this is going to be an important one. By tonifying the kidneys and generating fluids and tonifying yin, we can also treat xiao ke, or wasting and thirsting disorder. And then besides that, Xu Di Huang also tonifies kidney essence as well. So tonifies kidney jing. So here we're tonifying pretty much all of the substantial things. We're tonifying blood, tonifying yin, and tonifying essence. So when you say tonifying kidney essence, this can be delayed development. Like, we need kidney essence in order to grow and strengthen the bones. This can also mean if you have a waning kidney essence, you can have symptoms of like premature aging. So we can see things like premature graying of the hair, diminished mental acuity, memory loss, or impotence. And so that's expensive. Don't chew on that. And so that can be a sign of waning kidney essence as well. So some of the things we say here is Xu Di Huang is prepared Romania. The way it's prepared is actually by soaking it in wine and then steaming it. And then when we're talking about our sticky and cloying nature of herbs, Xu Di Huang is especially sticky and cloying. I think of all the herbs we have to worry about, Xu Di Huang is probably the one we have to worry about the most in terms of its sticky, cloying nature that can upset digestion. So when we have Xu Di Huang, we will definitely want to keep a lookout for, is the patient starting to experience some indigestion, some nausea problems? Do they get an upset stomach after they take their herbs? If they've been taking their herbs for a while, do they start to develop loose stools? And that's a sign of that this sticky, cloying nature of Xu Di Huang is affecting digestion. So it's very common to combine it with herbs like Chen Pea, aged tangerine peel from the regulate qi category. Mu Xiang is also from the regulate qi category, or Sha Ren, cardamom from the aromatic transformed dampness category, also has an action of regulating qi. So when we look at the taste is, of course, sweet because we're tonifying. The channels entered are the heart, kidney, and liver because we're tonifying liver blood, but we're also tonifying heart blood to deal with things like palpitations. And then we're also tonifying kidney yin and kidney essence. So the entering channels make sense, but notice that the dosage is larger than average, not slightly larger than average, but the dosage is larger than average, 9 to 30 grams. So not only is this a sticky cloying herb, we tend to use a lot of it as well. So that's something we'll want to pay attention to. And basically, the way I think about this is, remember, normally we say that heavier herbs or heavier substances tend to have a larger dosage just because we need more of them. So our shells and minerals tend to have a larger dosage just because they're denser. I think of this in the same way, where if you have your sample of Xu Di Huang, it's a very heavy, thick, dense root. So it kind of has that same property that you need more of it. It's not like a light, fluffy flower. It's a very thick, dense root. So you need a larger dosage just in order for it to fill up the pot the appropriate amount. So just remember that Xu Di Huang has a much larger than average dosage. And so the name Xu Di Huang means cooked earth yellow. So shu is a word for prepared, like sheng means raw, shu means cooked, di means earth, as in like the earth. I was going to say sometimes when we talk about the five phases, we use the word tu for earth, but that means more like earth as in soil. This means earth as in like the world, and huang means yellow. Why does it have that name? I don't actually know. But part of this is remember that we learned two versions of Romania root so far. So we've learned Shengdi Huang, raw Romania root, from the category herbs that cool the blood. And now we're learning Shudi Huang, prepared Romania root, in the category herbs that tonify blood. So these are herbs that, first of all, they look very similar. Like these are technically two different samples, but at least for me, when I look at these two herbs, it's very difficult for me to tell which one is raw and which one is prepared. It kind of depends on the supplier that you get it from. But these are the same herbs, just one is prepared in a different way. But because of this, they have very different properties and we'll use them in different ways. So in comparing them, Shengdi Huang, the raw herb, is cold and bitter. So it's very good for clearing heat, cooling the blood, whereas Shudi Huang, after it's gone through this preparation process of soaking it in wine and steaming it, then it's slightly warm in temperature. So we're going to use it for different temperature conditions. But in terms of their main action, remember, Shengdi Huang cools the blood. It clears blood heat. We use this in conditions, especially when there's bleeding. So in terms of the Wenbing, when heat gets into the blood level and we start seeing things like nosebleed, vomiting blood, blood in the urine, blood in the stool, or this can be used for menstruation issues like profuse bleeding or prolonged bleeding due to heat, Shengdi Huang will cool the blood, whereas Shudi Huang is more about tonifying blood and treating those signs of blood deficiency that we talked about, like pale face, dizziness, palpitations, and menstruation problems, but menstruation problems due to deficiency, where there's not enough blood to form the period. But then what's interesting here is that both of these herbs have an action of tonifying yin, but it's slightly different because of this preparation, because of this temperature change. So when we say that Shengdi Huang tonifies yin, we're kind of saying more that it tonifies the yin and generates fluid. So this is especially useful after you have a febrile disease and the fluids have been damaged, or you have dryness and thirst and constipation because heat has damaged the fluids. Shengdi Huang is more about tonifying yin to generate those fluids, whereas Shudi Huang is more about tonifying yin and tonifying essence. So this is more like the true yin of the kidneys, or remember we talked about tonifying kidney essence as in delayed development or premature aging situations. So those are some of the main differences there. And then one of the ways I remember this one is just looking at the root. This is a very thick, dense root, but it's also very black in color. So you can think that black is the color of the kidneys. So it's good for tonifying all those substantial things like kidney yin, kidney essence, but also blood. Because we say that blood and essence share the same source, or blood and essence are mutually engendering. So the fact that it's a thick, sticky, black root, somehow that helps me remember that we're talking about tonifying blood and tonifying yin as well. So for Shudi Huang, remember all these things, tonifies blood, tonifies yin. So this is our main herb for tonifying blood, but actually a lot of our kidney yin tonifying formulas are based on Shudi Huang as well. So this action of tonifying yin and tonifying essence is very important to remember about Shudi Huang as well. So that's Shudi Huang prepared Romania root. So for herbs that tonify yang, when you talk about tonifying yang, there are technically a few systems that we can talk about. We can talk about tonifying heart yang. We can talk about tonifying spleen yang. We can talk about tonifying kidney yang. Technically, we can tonify the yang of all these systems. But at least when it comes to this category, because we have the saying that the kidney is the root of all yin and yang in the body, when you talk about herbs that tonify yang, we're mainly talking about tonifying kidney yang. So basically, most of these herbs, when you talk about tonifying yang, they have the action of tonifies kidney yang. And by tonifying kidney yang, that will help yang in the other parts of the body. So we will have one or two that we specifically say warm the spleen yang, but this is a large, very large category, and most of these herbs are all about tonifying kidney yang. So let's take a look at what does kidney yang deficiency look like. So we can talk about the sinews and the bones. If there's not enough kidney yang, then we can have issues with the sinews and bones. And to some extent, we can say that kidney yang is related to kidney essence as well. So that's maybe how we can think about this. But if a person has kidney yang deficiency, we might see things like lack of strength in the sinews and bones, a feeble gait, as in you can't difficulty walking, or cold and painful knees and low back. Remember, the kidneys are in the low back, so the kidney governs the low back. So you might see weak, sore, painful, and cold low back. And also, the kidneys govern the lower jaw, they govern the lower body, and especially the knees. So we might see weak, sore, painful knees. And you can think of some of this as just the process of aging, that as people get older, their kidney yang starts to wane and they start to have some of these issues of low back pain, sore joints, a weak and feeble gait. You can maybe connect that to issues of aging as well, as the kidney yang starts to wane. The kidneys are also in the lower jaw. They govern reproduction. And so we can see certain reproductive issues like low libido. You don't have enough fire in your loins because your kidney yang is deficient. So poor libido and impotence or erectile dysfunction. You know, infertility, both male and female infertility. Sometimes when you talk about male infertility, we can use the term cold essence, as in the jing is cold. So it's not effective for fertility. Or with women, we can talk about cold in the womb, that if there's a deficiency cold or yang deficiency, that can cause fertility issues as well. And then if there's not enough kidney yang, there can be issues about leakage as well. So when we say leakage of essence, we can mean things like seminal emission, premature ejaculation, spermatoria, and things like that. And we may have mentioned this before, but sometimes we relate this to the kidney qi as well. That sometimes we talk about kidney qi deficiency, that the kidney qi has an action of containment and holding things in. But basically, we can maybe say that kidney qi deficiency is basically kidney yang deficiency plus leakage. So that could be leakage of fluids or leakage of essence. And so that's what some of these herbs will be taking care of, is by tonifying kidney yang, we're taking care of some of those leakage conditions as well. On that same topic, we can have urination issues or issues with fluids. Remember that the kidneys have something to do with fluid metabolism. They transform the fluids. If you don't have enough kidney yang, there's not enough of that transformative action, and so the fluids won't be transformed. So we can get things like frequent urination or incontinence. Sometimes we say long voidings of clear urine. Nighttime urination. Sometimes this is a question we ask, especially if we have male patients, when we, under that subheading of urination issues, we can ask, do you wake up frequently at night to pee? And so think about older men with prostate issues. We can relate that to kidney yang as well. So nighttime urination, kind of the idea here is like nighttime is a yin time of day. So if the yang is not there, we can have nighttime urination. Or what's interesting is we can actually also have inhibited urination as well. So we'll talk about edema, water retention with inhibited urination. And kind of the idea here is, on the one hand, maybe the kidney yang is deficient, so it's not transforming the fluids, so you just have a lot of fluids coming out. Copious urination, frequent nighttime urination, incontinence, the fluids are coming out. Or you can have the kidney is not transforming the fluids, but the fluids are stuck inside. So sometimes we can think about that. There's this gate at the urethra, that when the gate opens, the fluids can come out. When the gate closes, that holds the fluids in. And so the opening and the closing of that gate, the force that powers that is the kidney qi. So if kidney qi or kidney yang is deficient, sometimes the gate gets stuck open and you have incontinence and the fluids are just coming out. Sometimes the gate gets stuck closed and the fluids can't come out, so you can have urinary retention. Again, sometimes you can think about like older men with prostate problems, that they feel this sense of urgency, but then when they get there, not a lot comes out. It's dribbling urination, or it starts and stops, and that's because that gate is stuck closed and it can't open. But if the fluids aren't coming out, they can accumulate in the body, and we can end up with edema and water retention as well. Then we can also talk about spleen yang as well. And this is something that we said that most of these herbs are tonifying kidney yang, but some of them have a specific action of tonifying spleen yang as well. And kind of the idea here is that kidney yang is supposed to warm the spleen. So it's like spleen yang and the warmth of the spleen depends on the kidney. So typically we say that spleen yang deficiency is rooted in kidney yang. In fact, this is kind of interesting when we talk about the five phases and the generation cycle. We normally say that fire generates earth. And if we take this very literally, what we mean is like the heart generates the spleen along the Shun cycle. But sometimes what we can say is when we say fire generates earth, we can also interpret that to mean that the fire of the kidneys, the Mingmen fire of the kidneys, generates the spleen yang. And so that's another way we can think about it, that spleen yang is dependent on kidney yang. So if we have kidney yang deficiency, that can eventually lead to spleen yang deficiency. And if we don't have enough warmth in the spleen, we basically end up that the spleen can't digest the food or transform the food, so we end up with those types of problems. So especially sloppy stool, there's not enough warmth in the spleen to, you know, we call it the middle burner. It's supposed to cook down the food. There's not enough warmth there to cook and transform the food and transform the fluid, so you get loose, watery, sloppy stools. Or we could even have early morning diarrhea. Sometimes we say watery diarrhea with undigested food. So early morning diarrhea, this is sometimes called cock's crow diarrhea, as in when you wake up in the morning because the rooster is crowing, so cock's crow diarrhea. Or sometimes I've seen some translations where they call it fifth watch diarrhea. And I'm assuming that this is referring to if you were a guard on a tower, they had different watches. And so it's like the graveyard shift. And so fifth watch is referring to that early morning time of day. Anyway, we can have early morning diarrhea, and sometimes the way we explain this is that early morning when the sun is rising and the rooster is crowing, that's the time when yin is turning into yang. And so if your yang is deficient, all that stuff, that loose, sloppy, watery stool is going to come out at that time of day because that's the transition of yin to yang. So that's something we would look for. A key symptom of spleen yang deficiency would be early morning diarrhea. The kidneys are also supposed to supply the ren and the chong. Again, here we're saying that the kidneys govern the lower jiao. When you talk about kidney yang, we're also kind of talking about kidney essence. And so we can talk about lower jiao issues, as sometimes we term this as instability of the ren and the chong, or instability of the penetrating and conception vessels. And this is a way of explaining that we might have certain menstruation issues or lower jiao issues. So like flooding and spotting, so incessant bleeding. So during the period, you have profuse bleeding, a lot of blood, prolonged menses where it lasts for a long time. Normally, we expect the period to last, you know, 5 to 7 days. If it's going 8, 9, 10 days, we would call that prolonged menses, or spotting between periods. And so this we could also kind of talk about this under the category herbs that stop bleeding. We can say one of the causes of bleeding is deficiency cold. So we can say if there's yang deficiency, that's deficiency cold causing instability of the penetrating conception vessels, and we get bleeding like flooding and spotting. So profuse menses, prolonged menses. Clear vaginal discharge. And so again, sometimes you can think about this as leakage of essence as well. So we can put this under ren and chong, or we can talk about that as leakage of essence. And so here we're talking about more like thin, clear, white vaginal discharge, profuse vaginal discharge without a strong foul smell. This is opposed to if we have a lot of cold, damp condition, then it might be more thick and white. If we had a damp heat condition, it might have a yellow color and a foul smell. But since we're talking about deficiency, this is going to be more like a thin, clear vaginal discharge. And then there's another interesting thing. We talk, you can use the term qi absorption. What we're talking about here is lung issues. So there's this idea that when you breathe in, the qi comes into the lung, but then the kidney has to reach up and grasp that qi and send it down. So on the one hand, the lung has an action of depurative downbearing. It's supposed to downbear that qi, but the kidney is also supposed to reach up and grasp it, or the kidney is supposed to help absorb that qi that's coming in from the lungs. So if the kidney is deficient, it could fail in this function of absorption, and we could end up with certain respiratory issues. So sometimes we use the phrase qi absorption, that the kidney is supposed to aid in qi absorption, or we can be more straightforward and say the kidney is supposed to grasp the lung qi. So sometimes we have things of kidney failing to grasp lung qi, causing certain respiratory issues like asthma, coughing, wheezing, and shortness of breath. And then we specifically say there's difficulty on inhalation. And this is just one of the way we differentiate between lung issues and kidney issues. So sometimes if the person, they're okay to inhale, but they have difficulty exhaling, they have difficulty pushing the air out, like I think we see this like with emphysema, we might say that's more of a lung issue. Whereas if they have difficulty with inhalation, they have difficulty getting the air in, it might be more likely that's a kidney issue of the kidneys not grasping the lung qi. So we'll say, coughing, panting, shortness of breath with difficulty on inhalation. Or we can say more exhalation than inhalation. That's very easy for them to get the air out, but they can't get the air in. And again, kidney yang is also related to kidney essence. Kidney essence is more substantial, it's more substance, but it's stored by the kidney, and we relate this to kidney yang as well. So a lot of these herbs, in addition to tonifying kidney yang, they will also tonify kidney essence as well. So if we have deficiency of kidney essence, we can think about delayed development. I think we've talked about this before in the deficiency heat category, that sometimes this delayed development can lead to heat signs. But you can think about that kidney essence has to do with growth and development. And so sometimes we talk about this with malnutrition. There can be failure to thrive, but sometimes there's just a constitutional deficit of kidney jing. And so we can see these issues of delayed development. In Chinese, this is called the five delays, or the five slownesses, or the five weak, or five limpnesses, like your limp body. So these are things like delayed walking, delayed talking, delayed teething, delayed closing of the fontanelles, and these are talking about like normal development markers in children. If the child does not have enough jing or essence, then there might be delays in these things. But we can also talk about this as premature signs of aging. So you can think about some of those things like just the things that happen as you get older, your kidney yang starts to wane, you're using up your stores of pre-heaven essence, you haven't been nourishing your post-heaven essence, and you start to get these premature signs of aging, like early graying of hair, dizziness and flowery vision or blurred vision or floaters in the eyes, deafness and tinnitus, wilting sinews and bones, and a feeble gait. So again, some of these signs that come in with, you can think about as people get older, their kidney yang starts to wane and their kidney essence starts to wane as well. We look at the tongue and the pulse. The tongue is going to be pale and swollen. So this is kidney yang deficiency. So it's going to be, we're going to see cold signs. So that's why you see a pale tongue rather than a red tongue. And we say the tongue is enlarged or swollen, or sometimes they actually just say a fat tongue, pang shi in Chinese. And again, this has to do with the kidney is not transforming the fluids because the kidney yang is deficient. It's not transforming and moving those fluids. So those fluids accumulate and it can cause swelling in the body, but can also cause swelling in the tongue as well. So a swollen or enlarged tongue is a sign that kidney yang is not transforming those fluids. The pulse is going to be deep, slow, and forceless. In terms of depth, it's going to be deep because this is an interior condition. It's going to be slow because, again, yang deficiency is a cold condition, and so there's not enough yang to move the blood through, so it's slow in terms of its speed, and forceless because this is a deficiency condition. So deep is interior, slow is cold, forceless is deficiency. Makes sense for kidney yang deficiency. So this is a slide in the notes. I think we covered everything here about these different signs and symptoms and relayed them to the different functions of the kidney. Did we miss anything? We can also say that these herbs are commonly combined with herbs that warm the interior. So this is the first category we looked at this semester. And so these two things kind of go together, tonifying kidney yang and warming the interior. So especially our herbs that have an action of warming the kidney or warming the lower jiao, like futsa, aconite, and rouguei, cinnamon. Those are often come up in our formulas that tonify kidney yang. And so sometimes students get confused here. They ask a question about what's the difference between warming the interior and tonifying yang? Well, a couple things. That one, remember when we talked about warming the interior, we said these herbs warm the interior and expel cold. So on the one hand, when we're warming the interior, we're dealing with both excess cold and deficient cold, and we're trying to disperse that cold. And number two, we're focused on the branch symptoms of cold. So we are trying to warm things up, but we're also just using the acrid flavor to disperse or scatter the cold. When we talk about kidney yang, we're only talking about yang due to deficiency. So it's only deficiency cold. We're generally talking about cold. Again, we're generally addressing the kidney. When we talk about warming the interior, we can talk about warming the lung, warming the middle jiao, warming the kidneys, warming the liver channel. Here, we're mainly just talking about warming kidney yang. And number three, this is more focused on the deficiency condition on the root cause. So instead of using the acrid flavor to disperse the cold, we're using the sweet flavor to tonify. So those are some of the differences. But we will combine these two, that it's very often to use herbs that warm the interior with herbs that tonify yang. And then we also say that many of these herbs tonify kidney yin as well. And this is kind of just a general treatment strategy that we don't want to tonify yang without tonifying yin as well. So we'll see this come up in our formulas, that even our formulas that tonify yang, they'll have some ingredients from this category, but we'll also use certain other herbs that tonify yin, like shu di huang, just to keep the formula balanced. And so we can think about this as if all we did was tonify yang, that would just create heat and burn things up and actually cause more problems. So sometimes we use this analogy for yin and yang. We talk about a candle and a flame. And so if your flame gets too big, it's just going to burn away the candle. So if we're going to make the flame bigger, we need to also make the candle bigger as well so they stay balanced out. And so that's what we're going to do when we tonify yang. We're going to tonify yin as well to make sure that it has some substance that it can attach to, that it can be anchored by. So that's something we'll do in formulas, but that's something we'll also see a lot of these herbs tonify yang, but they also tonify yin, which is convenient that they can be very balanced like that. Then in terms of cautions, these herbs are warm, acrid, and they can cause heat signs if used in too large of a dosage or too long term or without creating balance in your formula. So this is another thing where sometimes, especially as people get older, they think, oh, I need to boost my kidney yang. I need to tonify my kidney yang and kidney essence. And so they start taking some of these things. But really, they just end up with heat signs. They end up with red eyes, bloodshot eyes, high blood pressure, and things like that. So that's something we have to be careful about, either the dosage, how much we give. More is not necessarily better. We want to kind of warm things up slowly. And then we also want to pay attention to duration, that how long are we taking these herbs for. If we take them long-term, it might cause some problems. So when we look at the properties of these herbs are, of course, sweet in flavor because a sweet flavor tonifies. This has been a common theme in our tonifying category. These herbs are going to be warm in temperature because we're tonifying yang. The main channels entered, like we said, we can tonify the yang of the kidney, spleen, and heart, but most of these herbs are going to enter the kidney channel. A lot of them will actually enter the liver channel as well, which we'll see, but we can say we're tonifying the yang of these three systems, but it's mostly the kidney yang. So I would think more about the kidney channel. For cautions and contraindications, like we said, these herbs are warm and they can cause heat signs if we use them in too large of a dosage or if we use them long term. And also kind of what's implied here, hopefully this is obvious, but like if the patient has a heat condition, don't give them warm herbs. If a patient has yin deficiency with heat signs, don't give them warm herbs. So a lot of our cautions and contraindications for the individual herbs tend to be along those lines, but hopefully that's kind of obvious that if a person has heat signs, Don't give them hot herbs. Hopefully you don't have to know that about every single herb. The main action is to tonify the yang of the kidney, spleen, and heart, but again, mostly the kidney. And then we'll have two or maybe three that also tonify spleen yang as well. So that's something we'll want to pay attention to. But by and large, these tonify kidney yang. And like we said, they're often combined with herbs that warm the interior that we learned in that other category, especially futsa, aconite, and rogue cinnamon are very common to see in our kidney yang tonifying formulas. So when we look at this list of herbs, it's a very long list. There are a lot of herbs that tonify kidney yang, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but kind of my conjecture around this is that most of the famous old Chinese doctors, and especially the scholars who wrote things down, they tended to be court physicians, that they were physicians to the emperor or to the nobility and the upper class. And so the types of patients they saw were very interested in tonifying kidney yang. That on the one hand, they wanted to make sure that they could produce an heir. And so it was very important for these men in the noble class. They're like, I want to make sure my dick still works. So it was very important for those court physicians to have remedies for tonifying kidney yang. I think this also goes along with the idea that the alchemists, and they wanted to live forever. And so like we talked about premature signs of aging, that especially this noble class that could afford these expensive or exotic herbs, they were interested in retaining their youth and living forever. And a lot of these herbs fall under that category as well. So I think it's just like a bunch of Chinese guys wanted to make sure their dicks were still working. And so that's why we just have all of these herbs that tonify kidney yang. This is a very well-researched category. So it turns out now we just have all of these herbs in this category. So it's a very large category. So our first one is Lu Rong Servi Corno Pantotrichum. Lu Rong Servi Corno Pantotrichum. And this is deer velvet. And so I want to specifically say this is deer velvet. Sometimes people say this is deer antler, and it's a little bit different. So you can think about that deer. Each year they grow their antlers and then they shed them at the end of the season. And so this is the part at the very beginning where the antlers are not fully formed. They're not fully hardened or calcified. And so they're still in the process of growing. And that's what we mean by deer velvet. It's these younger antlers. And kind of the idea here is that you can think that this has really good regeneration properties. This is the doctrine of signatures for this deer velvet regeneration properties, that each year the deer shed their antlers and then they regrow. And so we're getting this velvet while it's in the process of regrowing. And so it's like we're tapping into that regeneration process. And so because deer antlers are things that self-regenerate, we can use that as a substance to regenerate our bodies. So Lu Rong tonifies kidney yang, and it's good for all of those things that we mentioned. So fatigue, cold extremities, weak and low back, urination problem, impotence. We also say it stabilizes the ren and the chong, or stabilizes the penetrating vessel and conception vessel for those lower jiao issues like uterine bleeding, flooding and spotting, vaginal discharge, infertility with cold in the womb. So we could just relate this to the kidneys, or some books will specifically say that Lu Rong has an action of stabilizing the penetration and conception vessels. So if you see that terminology come up on a question, you can know that's what it's talking about. Lu Rong also tonifies kidney essence as well, since as we could say these antlers, regrowing antlers, are kind of like marrow or something like that. So tonifying kidney essence, and in Bensky, he will also term this as this tonifies the governing vessel, or this tonifies the dumai. So again, if you're ever on a test and you see something about the penetrating, the conception, and the dew vessels, you can think Lu Rong. I think it's easier just to think of this as we're tonifying kidney yang and we're tonifying kidney essence, and we can just keep it simple and relate it to that. But when we say tonify kidney essence, we're talking about tonifying, strengthening tendon and bone for things like B syndrome, but also for atrophy conditions. And it also can help heal long-standing sores and wounds. We talked about this in the tonify qi category and the tonify blood category. If we just don't have enough qi, blood, or essence to heal the wounds, then these wounds can be difficult to heal. So by tonifying that, we help with that healing process. And basically, the way we take this is interesting. So Lurong is a very strong, very powerful yang tonic. It's also very expensive. So on the one hand, the dosage is very small, just 1 to 2 grams. The idea here is if you take too much of it, it will definitely cause those heat signs. So we want to be very careful about the dosage, and we want to monitor the patient as they're taking this, that it doesn't inadvertently cause too many heat signs. Sometimes I would use an analogy that if you're trying to make fish sticks and you turn up the oven too hot, you think, oh, I'm going to turn it up to 500 degrees to get this food cooked sooner. What you end up with is fish sticks that are burnt on the outside but still frozen on the inside. So we want to keep that in mind with our patients, that we're not trying to apply too much heat too quickly and they just end up burnt on the outside but still frozen on the inside. So number one, pay attention to dosage. And then number two, the way we take this, I'm not sure it's technically wrong to cook it in decoction, but it looks very funny, and we might even say you're not using it to its full potential. So I'd say you really don't cook this in decoction. The way you would take this is you would grind it into a powder and then just swallow that powder with the decoction, or you would grind it into a powder and put it into a pill form. So I think that using this in decoction, you're not using the herb to its full potential, and it's a very expensive herb. Good quality Lurong is very expensive, so you'll want to use it in pill or powder form. And then overtaking Lurong can lead to heat signs such as palpitations, headache, bloodshot eyes, and nosebleed. So all this heat will move up into the upper body. That heat can go into the heart and harass the heart, causing palpitations. It can move into the upper body, kind of like giving you yang rising of heat in the head, like headache, bloodshot eyes, and nosebleed, bleeding due to heat. So this, again, we want to be careful about our dosage and how long we take it. Notice that it's salty in flavor, because on the one hand, it's an animal product, and we tend to say that animal products are salty in flavor. But you can also think that the salty flavor goes to the kidneys. So that's another thing, that this herb strongly goes to the kidney because of its salty flavor. And the name Lurong, Lu means deer, and Rong means like a bud or a sprout. So this isn't the full-grown antler. This is just when the antlers are budding or sprouting out. They're in that process of growth, and so we're stealing that growth from them, like dark magicians who suck the life out of other animals so that we can live a longer, healthier life. But Lurong, deer bud or deer sprout. So with herbs at tonifying yin, we're treating yin deficiency. And so what does yin deficiency look like? Well, technically we can have yin deficiency in all of these different systems. So if we have lung yin deficiency, we might see things like dry cough with little phlegm. Remember, when we talk about yin, we're also talking about the fluids. So the fluids could be dried out, so we get a dry cough. And when the fluids dry out, that can turn into like thick, difficult to expectorate phlegm. So either a dry cough with no phlegm, or if there is phlegm, it's going to be that dry, scanty, difficult to get out type of phlegm. We can have thirst. We can maybe think about this as the lung regulates the water passages. So if we have lung yin deficiency, we might see things like thirst. Dry throat, dry skin. Again, we just have a lack of fluid, so we see general signs of dryness. And you can think that sometimes we say that the throat is the gateway to the lung. And so sometimes when you get like an external attack of wind heat, it can sit there and stagnate and turn into heat toxicity. And we get that sore, swollen throat. So that's why I say the throat is the gateway to the lung. And then remember, the lung governs the exterior. It governs the skin and the body here. So we might see dry skin in cases of lung yin deficiency. And then we can actually even have coughing up blood if the dryness is extreme enough. And so one way you can think about this, if there's just a little bit of dryness, maybe you have a dry cough or there's scanty phlegm that's difficult to expectorate. But the dryness is so great, we can actually get coughing up of blood. And what I think about this is sometimes, like, if your skin gets really dry, you have really dry hands, the skin can start to crack and you can actually get bleeding due to dryness. And so the same thing can be happening in your lungs, that if your lungs get so dry, it's like the inside starts to crack and you get bleeding in the lungs. So we see coughing up blood. we can have stomach yin deficiency. And some of this might look a little bit similar, but remember we say that the stomach is the source of fluids. So again, with stomach yin deficiency, we're going to see some signs of dryness as well. So lack of appetite, if there's not enough yin nourishing the stomach, then you might have lack of appetite. Irritability, just like you're hot and bothered. Again, thirst, like we said, the stomach is the source of fluids. So if you have stomach yin deficiency or dryness in the stomach, you can have thirst. Other signs of dryness, like dry mouth. Here we're specifically saying dry mouth instead of dry throat. I'm not sure there's a huge difference. And we can also see constipation. You can maybe think that the stomach and the large intestine form the yang-ming pair. And so if there's dryness in that system, we'll also have dry stools, difficult to pass stools, or constipation. Technically, we can also have something called spleen yin deficiency. And this is a little bit weird because normally we say that the stomach is averse to heat and averse to dryness, but the spleen, it likes warmth and it likes dryness. So spleen yin deficiency seems a little bit weird. Normally, when we talk about yin deficiency in the middle jaw, we're going to go to the stomach. But when we do say spleen yin deficiency, this is a dual vacuity of spleen qi and spleen yin. So we're going to see signs of spleen qi deficiency plus some signs of dryness. And really, it just looks very similar to stomach yin deficiency. So again, poor appetite, constipation because there's not enough fluids. And then we specifically say dry lips. I think in terms of the sense organs of the face, we can say the spleen goes to the mouth or to the lips, so we can say dry lips. But again, this is a kind of a bit of a more unusual pattern. Not every book mentions spleen yin deficiency. So like if you're in Machi Ocha, he does not have a pattern called spleen yin deficiency, but some books will talk about spleen yin deficiency, but it's a very weird kind of thing. Just know that we're talking about spleen qi deficiency and yin deficiency. We can have liver yin deficiency. And so a lot of these signs and symptoms are going to look similar to liver blood deficiency. You can think that blood is the yin substance that belongs to the liver. So a lot of these things are going to look the same. So we can have dry eyes and poor night vision. The liver goes to the eyes. If there's not enough liver blood nourishing the eyes, we'll end up with eye problems. If there's not enough liver yin going to the eyes, we'll end up with a similar problem. Same thing, dizziness, tinnitus. Now, if there's not enough yin going up to the head, to the sense organs, we can get things like dizziness, tinnitus, dry nails. We said the sinews, the liver governs the sinews. So if there's not enough liver yin moistening the sinews, the sinews can dry out and we get spasm and cramping. But also the nails are the surplus of the sinews. So we could also see dry nails. And so all of these things they have a lot of overlap with liver blood deficiency. So a lot of people ask, how do we know the difference between liver yin deficiency and liver blood deficiency? And really it's going to come down to temperature, that with liver yin deficiency, we'll see a low grade sensation of heat, or we'll see heat signs in the tongue and pulse. And so usually with liver blood deficiency, the liver blood has a function of warming the body. And so if a person has blood deficiency, they're more likely to feel cold in temperature. Technically, there are some patterns where we have liver blood deficiency with heat signs, like in the formula Dongwei Bushui Tong. But for the most part, when you have liver blood deficiency, the patient feels cold. But when you have liver yin deficiency, the patient will feel warm. And so the signs and symptoms look the same, but the temperature is different. But along with that, with this liver yin deficiency, if the liver yin is not anchoring the yang, that yang can start to rise upward. So we can call that liver yang rising, or hyperactive ascent of liver yang. And so we'll just see more symptoms in the upper body of this yang going up into the head. So we'll see things like vertigo, tinnitus, because all this yang is swirling up in your head, dry mouth and throat because we're going upwards, and then insomnia. So those are the things we can see with. We can just have pure liver yin deficiency and see some of these dryness and heat signs. Or when that liver yin is deficient, the yang is no longer rooted and it starts to ascend in an abnormal amount. And then we can also have kidney yin deficiency. Like we said before, the kidneys are the root of all yin and yang in the body. So pretty much any type of yin deficiency is going to involve the kidneys. So we can see things like, again, dizziness and tinnitus. You can think that the kidneys go to the ears. The sense organ of the kidney is the ear. So we might see certain ear problems if there's not enough kidney yin. weak low back and legs. Again, the kidneys are in the lower back and they govern the lower jaw. They govern the lower body and specifically the knee. So we'll see weakness in the low back, and then we can have weakness or soreness in the legs or knees. Heat in the palms and soles. We call this five center heat, or heat in the five hearts. So we can have heat in the palms of the hands, heat in the soles of the feet, and then heat in the chest or in the center. And so we call that five center heat. I'm actually not entirely sure. I've never heard a good explanation as to what the mechanism for this is. I'm not sure if it's just like you have yin deficiency and you're hot. What I sometimes think about it is that if there's not enough kidney yin, it's not anchoring the yang inward. And so just like we can have yang that floats to the surface, here with five center heat, we have a yang that's going to the extremities, to the palms and the soles. So sometimes with kidney yang deficiency, we talk about inversion cold of the limbs, where if you have yang deficiency, there's not enough yang going out into the hands and feet. Well, here I think about yin deficiency, that we don't have enough yin anchoring that yang backwards, so that yang is floating out and you get warm palms and soles. I'm not sure if that's a real thing, but that's kind of how I think about it. So we call that five center heat, heat in the palms and the soles, and then the fifth one is heat in the chest. We're going to have afternoon or low-grade fever. And so this is just kind of a more generalized sensation of warmth. With yin deficiency, things usually happen in the afternoon or at nighttime, just because those are the yin times of day. So if your yin is sufficient, it can't control the yang, and so you end up things with afternoon low-grade fever. One thing that we don't mention here but is still very common is we can talk about tidal fever, like a fever that rises and falls like the tides. Basically, this is like hot flashes. We might say this is more of a heat sign than a yin deficiency sign. And then sometimes with this heat in the palms and soles, we'll also use the term malar flush, like your face is getting red because you have the heat. And again, you can maybe think about women going through menopause. Night sweats is another common one. Again, sweating that happens at night because nighttime is the yin time of day. If your yin is deficient, it can't control the fluids, and so it leaks out. Or just your yin is deficient, so you feel more hot, and so you get hot and sweaty. And then remember, the kidney controls fluid transformation, especially in the lower jaw. The kidney transforms the fluids and produces the urine. So we can see scanty urine, as in a small amount of urine, or it's going to be dark in color rather than being clear. Like with kidney yang deficiency, sometimes we say long voidings of clear urine. So you're like, you have profuse urination, or you're peeing a lot and the urine is clear in color. Well, here with yin deficiency, because we don't have enough fluids, we're going to have scanty urination, a small amount, and it's going to be darker in color. Sometimes we say a dark red color, indicating there's heat or just not enough. Another interesting one, loose teeth can be specifically a sign of yin deficiency. You can think that the kidney governs the bones and your teeth are bones. So that's one of the things that happens. We will see that come up in one or two formulas that specifically talk about loose teeth due to kidney yin deficiency. And then we may have talked about this before in another category, but steaming bone disorder. Again, this might be more like the branch symptoms of heat rather than the root things you would see with kidney yin deficiency, but it does come up in some of our herbs here that if kidney yin is deficient and we have enough heat, it can start to feel like your bones are steaming. You have sometimes the surface of the body feels cool, but you feel heat in your bones. So again, you can think that the kidneys govern the bones. If your kidney yin is so deficient that you have so much heat, it could start to feel like your bones are steaming. There are some other ones that we haven't mentioned here, like one symptom specifically in men is spermatorrhea or seminal emission, that if we have that heat due to kidney yin deficiency, we can have the just loss of essence, that the jing is just squirting out. So one way I think about this is just if the kidneys are deficient, they fail in their function of containment and they can't hold the essence in and it starts to leak out. But another way I think about this specifically with kidney yin deficiency, I kind of start to think about, we talk about heat is a cause of bleeding, that when heat gets into the blood, it can cause the blood to speed up so much that it begins to move recklessly or frenetically outside of the vessels, and that's bleeding. Well, here I think kind of the same thing is happening with the essence or with semen, that heat is getting in there, it's causing your jing to move recklessly, and it just spurts out when you don't want it to. So that could be a sign of kidney yin deficiency specifically in men. And then In women, we might have both, I guess both men and women might have things like hyperactive sex drive or high libido and things like that. So a lot of signs with kidney yin deficiency, a lot of them having to do with heat. Technically, we can also have heart yin deficiency as well. So we can see things like palpitations, heat getting into the heart, insomnia, because the heat is disturbing the Shen, or there's not enough yin to calm your Shen down, and profuse dreaming, or we also say dream disturbed sleep. And so technically we can have these things, we can have heart yin deficiency, but it turns out that we have another category called herbs that nourish the heart and calm the spirit. So when we're dealing with symptoms of heart yin deficiency, we have a separate category and we'll go to that category instead. So we might not see a lot of herbs in this category that deal specifically with heart yin deficiency. So even though we can have yin deficiency in all of these systems, when it comes to this category, we can roughly divide it into two. We can say there are herbs that tonify lung and stomach yin, and there are herbs that tonify liver and kidney yin, and we can kind of group it like that. And kind of the idea here is, remember we said that the lung has this function of regulating the water passages, and then we said the stomach is the source of fluids. So we talk about lung and stomach yin deficiency, we're more talking about dryness. So dryness, thirst, dry mouth, dry throat, dry cough, a lot of signs of dryness, and then we can also have irritability as well. When we're talking about liver and kidney yin deficiency, we're talking, there's still some dryness, but we're also talking more about heat signs. So we had those things like five center heat, malar flush, tidal fever, low grade afternoon fever, steaming bone disorder, a lot more signs of heat, but then we can also see things like dizziness and tinnitus. So sometimes there's some overlap here, but I think in general, we can divide this category up into the first half is about herbs that tonify lung and stomach yin and deal with dryness, thirst, irritability. And then the second half is herbs that tonify liver and kidney yin. And we're talking more about the true yin of the kidneys, and we're dealing more with heat signs. We look at the tongue is going to be red with little or no coat. It's red because of the heat. There's little or no coat because there's not enough yin fluids to form the coat. So it'll be a scanty coat, or there might be no coat at all. Another thing that we don't say here, but we might see, are cracks on the tongue can be a sign of yin deficiency or of dryness. And here, one way I think about this is, think about if you have like a piece of bare soil, if the soil is moist, it'll be nice and smooth on top. But if you start to have a drought and the soil dries out, as it dries out, it starts to form cracks along the surface, just because as the moisture leaves, the soil contracts and you get cracks in the surface. The same thing is happening on your tongue. If you have yin deficiency or dryness, when that dries out the tongue, that can start to form cracks. And then sometimes when we get into tongue diagnosis, we'll talk about the location or the orientation of the cracks. We can interpret it in different ways. So like if you have small horizontal cracks, that might be stomach yin deficiency. Or if you have a large center crack that goes to the root, that might be more like kidney yin deficiency. So that might be another thing we would see, is cracks on the tongue indicating dryness. The pulse is going to be thin and rapid. When we say thin, we can say thin, fine, or thready. These are all different translations of the Chinese himai. And here we're talking about the diameter of the vessel, that there's not enough yin to fill the vessel. So the vessel is thin in diameter. The pulse is going to be rapid because we're dealing with heat. Yin deficiency is a heat condition, and heat causes the blood to speed up, so we feel a rapid pulse. Another thing we might feel here in the pulse is sometimes we say that the pulse is floating or superficial as well. And so here the idea is there's not enough yin to root the pulse downward, so it starts to float outward to the surface. So this can get a little bit confusing, because normally when you talk about a floating pulse, we say that's a sign of an exterior condition, an exterior attack, or there's something going on the outside of the body. But technically, we can also have a floating pulse indicating yin deficiency. So in both of these cases, the depth of the pulse is telling us where the qi is in the body. So if we have an exterior attack, the qi rises to the surface to meet it, and so we feel a floating pulse. But if we have yin deficiency, there's not enough yin to root the qi downward, so the qi kind of floats to the exterior, and so we feel a floating pulse or a superficial pulse on the exterior. So tongue and pulse, red with a little coat, and a thin, rapid pulse. We may also see cracks, or we may sometimes see a floating pulse as well. So here we have the slide. I think this just summarizes everything that we talked about so far. I don't think we missed anything. We look at the properties of these herbs. These herbs are, of course, going to be sweet in flavor because a sweet flavor tonifies and moistens. So that's what we're doing in this category, is tonifying yin and moistening dryness. So we use the sweet flavor to accomplish that. The temperature is going to be cold because yin things are cold in nature. If a person has yin deficiency, we're going to see heat signs. So when you want to use herbs that are cool or cold in temperature. So this is the one that sometimes people get mixed up on. They think that all tonifying herbs are warm in temperature. But when it comes to tonifying yin, those herbs are actually cool or cold in temperature. Entering channels are going to be lung, stomach, liver, and kidney, because those are the types of yin we're tonifying. Generally, we're tonifying lung and stomach yin, or we're tonifying liver and kidney yin. Like we said, we can tonify heart yin, and we can maybe tonify spleen yin, but in this category, we're usually looking at either lung and stomach yin deficiency or liver kidney yin deficiency. Main action, like we said, is to tonify yin and moisten dryness. So we're tonifying the yin, we're adding more substance to the yin, but we can also say that we're moistening dryness. So sometimes we say nourish yin or moisten dryness, things like that, because we're dealing with the dryness. Cautions and contraindications. Like all herbs in this category, whenever we're dealing with sweet herbs or tonifying herbs, we have to worry that these herbs can be very sticky and cloying. They can easily cause digestive problems. They can easily cause middle jaw qi stagnation. So we have to be careful about this stagnating quality of these herbs. But here, in addition, not only are these herbs sweet and sticky, they're also cold in temperature. So we really have to be careful about damaging the spleen. That the spleen doesn't like coldness, so we need to worry about both of those things. The sticky quality and the coldness can obstruct the spleen and stomach. So we're either going to combine it with other herbs that help with this, or we just want to pay attention to make sure that our patients are not having issues when they take these herbs, that these herbs can very easily damage the spleen. So again, when I learned this category, we divided it up into these two sections of herbs that tonify lung and stomach yin versus herbs that tonify liver and kidney yin. As far as I know, I'm not sure the books actually do this. I know Bensky just gives us one long list of tonifying herbs. I can't remember if Chen and Chen makes this distinction or not. But basically, our first half, we're tonifying lung and stomach yin. And here we're talking about body fluids or moistening dryness. So when I was in school, my teacher from China went so far to make the statement that when we say tonify lung and stomach yin, that statement is equivalent to saying generates body fluids, that those two things mean the same thing. So when we talk about tonifying lung and stomach yin, we're going to be talking about generating fluids to moisten dryness. When we talk about liver and kidney yin, we're going to be talking more about those things like five center heat, night sweats, a lot more heat signs as well. So that's where we're going with this category. Next is Mai Men Dong Ophiopogonus Radix. Mai Men Dong Ophiopogonus Radix. And then sometimes that middle word men is optional. So sometimes you will just say Mai Dong, which I think is kind of funny. So Mai Dong Ophiopogonus Radix. This one tonifies lung yin, like we saw before. So for dry cough, cough with thick phlegm, because the yin deficiency has caused the fluids to congeal, or even coughing up blood. If that dryness gets into the lungs, if there's yin deficiency, the lung can dry out so much that it's like you get cracks and you get bleeding. So we can have coughing up blood as well. So by moistening that dryness, we can help with that situation. We can also say it tonifies stomach yin as well for dry mouth and dry tongue. Again, the stomach is a source of fluids. So when we have stomach yin deficiency, we'll see dryness. We even talk about the coating on the tongue. That coating on the tongue is the turbid yin of the stomach that comes up and mists the tongue. So if we have stomach yin deficiency, that yin is not coming up to moisten the tongue. So we get dry tongue specifically. So again, this is another one where we could just say it tonifies lung and stomach yin. And here we're talking about dryness, thirst, and cough. The other thing we should remember is Mai Men Dong clears heart heat as well. And so this is for certain Shen problems due to heat entering the heart. So for irritability and fever that worsens at night. So this is one that it's very easy to remember that Maimendong tonifies lung and stomach yin, but we also need to remember that Maimendong has an action of clearing heart heat as well. We will see this come up in certain formulas for certain types of Shen disturbance when the kidney and heart are not communicating. Sometimes we'll use Maimendong to clear that heart heat to deal with things like irritability and insomnia. And then Maimendong also moistens the large intestine for constipation due to dryness. And so again, we can think about this going along with the stomach, that the stomach and the large intestine form the yang-ming pair. And so in addition to moistening the lungs, moistening the stomach, we also moisten the large intestine for constipation due to dryness. So Maimendong, the name, again, Dong means winter. So we can say Maimendong means luxuriant winter, but Dong means winter. We saw this before with like Dongguazi is winter melon seed, or we said Dongchong Xiaocao, winter bug, summer herb. So Dong means winter. And then Maimendong, luxuriant winter. I think here, so the word men means gate, and I think what happened here is there was an earlier word that meant like lush or a certain type of plant, and over time that character, I don't know what the word is, like got bastardized, or there were people who were not so literate, and so when they copied down the character, they copied it down wrong. It sounded like men, but the character was slightly different, and so it eventually just turned into the word men for gate, but that doesn't actually mean anything. So Maimen can mean, sometimes we translate it as luxuriant winter, and that's why we can also sometimes drop the men in the middle and just say Maidong for Ophiopogonus radix, tonifies lung and stomach yin, but then also remember it clears heart heat as well to treat certain Shen problems. So that is our category, herbs that tonify the yin. That is the last section in our very large category of tonifying herbs, so we're done with that category. But that's it for this one. I think the next one not sure if we're herbs that calm the spirit. We'll see you in the next one, next category, whichever category it happens to be. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.